looking. Deep pattern. Downfield. Touchdown, Miami. What a throw. Devontae Parker.
Holy smokes. What a drive.
What's up, Dolph fans, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins. I don't got to ask you how it's going, but I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and I'm here to bring you your daily dose of Miami Dolphins football. And on today's show, it's a seventh straight loss for the good guys. Tough, tough times indeed. We'll get through it here on the recap edition of the Drive Time Podcast with some quotes from Brian Flores postgame, my five takeaways, including the mistakes that got us here, the defense playing good, but not for long enough, the special teams struggling to find their form, and everything in between. From the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is the Drive Time Podcast.
That's another Miami Dolphins.
The Dolphins drop another game. It seems like a long, long time ago that they were 1-0 coming off a road victory in New England. Seven straight losses and the fourth straight after three games where the Dolphins lost on the final play. They take Buffalo to the break, tied 3-3. Had a chance to take a lead a few times there, and mistakes continue to plague them. But they really hung in there in this game that not many folks gave them much of a chance in, and that was encouraging for a while. But then it kind of hit that point where things began to unravel, as they seemingly have pretty much each of the last 7 weeks here. And we lost the thread from there. But then the offense goes on to score some points, and the defense has a chance to get off and get the football back to them after a great decision to go for 2 points, which we'll talk about here later. This game, to me, was such a microcosm of the season in so many ways for this football team. You can't get complimentary football for more than some brief stretches. The offense goes and scores. Defense has chances to get off the field and just kicks themselves enough to where they can't do it. Buffalo goes down and gets points of their own. You play well for seemingly, you know, for big stretches through the first half of the game. Basically seemed like 9 of 10 plays were going in the Dolphins' direction, but you still find yourself tied. Barely up 3-0 in that first quarter, or in some cases, behind on the scoreboard where you've done the same thing in previous games. And in this game, tied at 3-3 at halftime after kind of shooting your best shot and then not having their best half with that quarterback, with that offense on that sideline. If you're up 3-3 after that, it's not going to be good. Sleeping Giant awoke in this game. The mistakes, correctable mistakes, as we heard from head coach Brian Flores. And that's the most frustrating part. I talked to my co-host in the WQAM 560 postgame show, Seth Levitt, after we left the postgame show on Sunday night, the station, I should say. And I just told him this roster, it's not as bad as the plays would indicate or the results would indicate. There's a lot of good talent on this football team. This coaching staff has previously shown you their mettle in many ways. And so that's what makes it so frustrating to me, is this team, again, I don't know how much you subscribe to the you are what your record says you are, but in the NFL, really, at the end of the day, you are. And I don't see this team as a 1-7 football team, and that's what really kills me, because these little mistakes, these untimely false start penalties, not that there's ever a good time to have a false start penalty, failure to capitalize on Josh Allen throwing when he's in the grasp and not getting a takeaway there. It's a big opportunity to get one there. We talked about it in the Titans game last week. He had one of those. It got a big takeaway. Talked about it ad nauseum with Tua last week, throwing a takeaway of his own when he was in the grasp. Not making tackles when you have chances to get off the field. Missing field goals. That's the most frustrating part to me, is these little things that continue to occur every single week. And that's where he won games previously in those slim margins, and find ways to beat good football teams by playing better, more disciplined football than them in the tough, most important stages of the game. The complete opposite has happened here in 2021. And then finally, the first and fourth quarter offensively. Once again, best moments for the offense. Second and third quarter, an absolute valley as far as production there. The third quarter, just no offensive production whatsoever for Miami. So same story, different week it seems like. And, you know, we're talking about Brian Flores there. I thought he had another really good post-game press conference where he addressed many things, as he does every week, but the Mike Gesicki play that snapped off of his leg, where he runs across the quarterback at the moment of the snap and causes causes a failed exchange, and the Buffalo Bills take over it there when you had at least 3 points, or an opportunity for 3 points, if not seven, right before the half, and getting the football out of the break in the third quarter to really drive home one of our keys to the game this week. Win the middle 8 minutes. Miami did good to get the football back and have scoring position, did well to get the football back in scoring position and drive down late and then get the football to start the third quarter. And it just was executed about as poorly as you can be. Turnover in a key area on a bad pre-snap alignment and snap, and then just three and out on the third quarter to start that thing off, where you have a chance to really keep the Buffalo Bills offense on the sideline for like 30, 35, 40 minutes of real time and pile up double-digit points in the process. None of that happens, and it turns into being a 15-point loss at the end of the day. So he talked about that. Brian Flores did, the failure of communication, the fact that, you know, he busted his butt down the sideline for a possible timeout on that call, then opted not to right at the last moment. Something else we talked about in the postgame show, that was coming off a timeout. So Waddle can't get lined up over there, and this is kind of getting into the first takeaway, but just the mistakes that continue to happen. Tua spoke about it too. He said it was a bad operation, bad football, has to get better. And I always go back to this Bruce Arians quote about how it takes about 8 weeks or so to really get comfortable in a new system, a new offense. And of course, case by case, right? That's how this league works. That's how life mostly works. But, you know, Bruce has won a lot of games in this league, so he's not a bad guy to quote. He talks about how it takes about 8 weeks to get familiar with the system. But here we are in week eight, and not only are these issues persisting, they're seemingly increasing. And these, you know, OJ talked about this in the postgame show as well, how the play call is, the first part is your alignment, the second part is a shift or a motion or a key or a read, and the third part is the actual play itself. And to not get the first part down, how can you expect to execute anything else when you're not correctly lined up? So something we talked about a while back in the podcast, something the coaches and players have addressed here for us this week. Man, that makes it tough. Tough to live, tough to win, I should say. Make your living when you're executing that in that way and coming up short in that area so often. So it's frustrating. I talked in the postgame show about how, you know, how little joy the game of football has brought this season for so many reasons. And, you know, it's tough. I get it. I am you. I am one of you guys. I'm a big fan of this team. So hang in there, Dolphins fans. Keep those chins up, and because that's all you can do right now. As Tua said after the game, all you can do is keep going. A few more notes here from the Brian Flores postgame press conference before we get to my five takeaways I want to dive in on. He talked about after the game, he didn't come to the podium for about an hour after the game, which is pretty rare, especially in my time here covering the team. And he talked about that. He said that he sat by himself, let the players go out of the locker room, and the gravity of the losing streak kind of weighing on him. That part, you know, as someone that sympathizes with humans, that killed me, because this is a great man who's a good football coach, and it just kills me to hear him speak out on that. And it's not just the fans that losing impacts, guys. These guys all wear it, and it's hard on them to, harder, you know, should be harder, and it is much harder for those guys who have their, you know, their livelihoods and their, just what you put your, you know, 100 hours of work in every week into something to not get the results. I can't imagine that. It's got to be very difficult on them. So I can feel the gravity of Brian Flores' voice when he talks about that. And then finally, to wrap it up here, he did mention that Preston Williams did not travel for disciplinary reasons to this game, and that he will be back with the team after the fact. So there you have it. There's some of the presser notes after the game that I thought were interesting. Let's go ahead and dive into the takeaways here. And I touched on this quite a bit early, but the five takeaways start off with number one. It's just too many mistakes, and it's the story of the season. And you can point to so many areas of so many different games where you can say, man, if that just goes a little bit differently, maybe, but, you know, ifs and buts and candy and nuts or something like that. First two drives of the game were moving the football very effectively. Passing game, running game is cranking. Myles Gaskin picking up 7, 4, 5-yard chunks, which is great for this offense, right? We talk about being a second and mid to get to third and short, to convert on second and mid. It's to be able to use the first down plays after you convert a first down on the ground to go back to the air and get your chunk plays. Like, it was being very effective, opening up the middle part of the field for Tua to find Devontae Parker on some of those in-breaking routes. You know, Jalen Waddle making some catches, getting the football to his backs, everyone kind of getting involved there. But then you have some moments, false starts, a drop pass, a blown protection and assignment. Then you miss a 36-yard field goal. I mean, really good teams do that. And I think the Chiefs last year were a great example of that, where they, I heard a stat where the Chiefs had like not covered, but like four spreads in the last 18 games. And that was because, to me, they weren't playing up to their ability. They would have these just mistakes and mistakes and mistakes. And then finally, they would have a quarter where Patrick Mahomes and the boys would turn it on for 21, 28 points. And that was too much for you to overcome because you can't keep up with that kind of firepower. We saw the Bills in this game. They had some mistakes. The Dolphins certainly were a credit to their performance to cause those mistakes. But what happens? Eventually they get into the third quarter, fourth quarter, and they get on a roll. You just can't hold down those good teams for 60 minutes. But for a team like Miami, who's struggling to find their way pretty much in all three phases, let's be real about that. to have those mistakes, you just there's no possible way you can win football games with that formula. It's not going to happen. So until they can clean up the mistakes and just get aligned and get their field goal protection or their field goal kicking or whatever the case may be on the field goals, 3 weeks in a row, they missed three kicks all of last year. That includes extra points. To get all that figured out, you're going to have to do it if you're going to win a football game. I don't care how many explosive plays or good moments or good stretches or whatever the case may be. You're not going to win football games if you continuously make those errors that are small margins but collectively and cumulatively add up to this grand total where you basically are giving the opposition more opportunities than what they deserve. And in this league, the players, the coaches, the teams are too good to consistently make those mistakes, especially the Buffalo Bills. But back to the mistakes. So the first two drives, the false start, drop pass, sack, missed field goal. The final drive of the first half, you're driving, you convert on third and six, but you illegal shift. You literally could have kept Buffalo offense off the field for like 45 minutes at that point with a double dip, but then you get bailed out by a defensive penalty that gets you the drive going again. So you're still back on track to do that. And then you kind of play it a little bit conservatively. I understand the idea behind picking up a first down on second and two with 39 seconds to play. And Buffalo had no timeouts at this point either. But you can obviously get the first down and basically ensure last shot, right? But man, against that team, against Buffalo, I want touchdowns. And so to run the ball on second and two with, it was like 43 seconds of the snap, 15-yard penalty puts them down first and 10 at the 17-yard line. But it seemed like you were kind of playing for a field goal at that point to run the football there with two timeouts and still needing 33 yards to find the end zone. Luckily, they do get the 15-yard penalty. But then right down a few plays later, Waddle can't get lined up. And how often does it happen where guys are running around pre-snap and you see Big Mike Gesicki kind of directing traffic? Hey, you're over there. Now you got to go back over there and motion back across. Happens very frequently, and they talked about it post-game about the miscommunication or the personnel groupings and how different groupings cause or call for different guys to line up in different spots. And whatever the case may be, the operation has just not been good enough because there's been too much misalignment here. And in this case, you know, Waddle's trying to get set while Gesicki has to go back in motion across the formation, and the snap comes off too early as the play clock winds down, hits him in the thigh, and winds up being a fumble, and the Bills get a takeaway. And what a momentum killer that was at that point of the game. So you're already halfway into the game, tons of mistakes occurring. And then to compound matters, the luck is just outrageous. Like, I don't think Miami's bad luck away from winning games necessarily. Excuse me. But there's been three instances of either muff punts or reviewed muff punts over the last three games. Two of them weren't called. One was actually didn't touch the guy. The Jacksonville ball hit his finger. You could see his finger move just like it did in the Green Bay Arizona game the other night on Thursday Night Football. You could see the finger kick up when the ball came up. And of course, Brian Flores challenged that and didn't get the win on the challenge. The one last week hits right inside the punt returner's inside foot. And I don't know how it misses him, but it does. That's like the bounce of the football bad luck. And then the one today, and I don't understand this rule. Instead of a potential recovery in the end zone for a touchdown, it goes into the end zone after the fair, or not the fair catch, but the punt was muffed at the 8-yard line, goes back into the end zone for a touchback because the Buffalo Bills recover it. Not a safety, a touchback. So he gains 12 yards because he muffed the punt. And again, you call it by the rule book, but to me, the rule book, it seems weird that you would gain 12 yards when you made a mistake. That part bothered me. Just some further notes here. Why is alignment such an issue? I'm not really sure why the case may be. 11 first downs to 5 first downs in the first half for Miami. What an advantage that they had there. And then at some point in the third quarter, it was 9-0 for Buffalo. I didn't see the final count. I think it was 16-24. How you guys like me checking stats live on a podcast here? 16 first downs to 24 first downs. So after 11-5, Miami got 5 more first downs and Buffalo got 19 more. It's not a good winning formula. Buffalo 6-for-13 on third downs. Miami 4-for-14 on third downs. So that's a big issue. The swing of the game there. Total penalty yardage 9-for-58 for Miami. I mean, that's the 9 penalties. How uncharacteristic is that? It's obviously not the big personal fouls and the big defensive pass interferences. There was a big defensive pass interference. We'll talk about that here in just 1 second. But getting behind the chains on 2nd and 15, whatever the case may be, for the offense to go offsides and a false start. It's tough to overcome that, and they seem to be putting themselves in those situations way too frequently. And, you know, bottom third of the league right now in penalties and yardage assessed against them. It's just not who this team was previously, and it's tough to overcome that, and they're finding that out the hard way. And again, missed field goal once again from 36 yards for Jason Sanders. Really out of character for him. Takeaway number two. defense. I wrote this down that they were 1-for-7 on third downs at one point. They were 7 drives into the game and only had 3 points by the middle of the third quarter. I wrote, I don't even care what happens the rest of the way because Buffalo was at 120 yards and 1-for-7 on third down at this point into the game in the third quarter. And if I told you you were going to get that kind of production, you'd say Miami not only has a chance to win, they probably will because 3 points on 7 drives. The league average is a little bit over 2 points per drive, so every drive should equate to about 2 points. So for 7 drives to equate to 3 points, that's you're in phenomenal shape. It's not rocket science to tell you that. You know that. But at that point, to be in that position and to not close it out, I don't know. Like you have to close the game out and play 60 minutes, but the offense also has their responsibility to go ahead and make sure that you're rewarded and can maybe get more one-dimensional in the later parts of the game because of your reward for playing such strong defense. So again, the complimentary football aspect has not been good all year. But defensively, Miami's had 2 big stretches now against this quarterback who previously has just thrashed the Dolphins, and 2 massive stretches of play where he just couldn't really execute their offense. You know, batted passes at the line of scrimmage. Emmanuel Ogba had about 1,000 of those today. Failed running plays, TFLs. Miami was in the backfield frequently. Good coverage in the back end. Pass breakups. It was all there. It was all there for the taking for the offense, and they just couldn't quite execute it. But defensively, I wrote down Josh Allen, Javon Holland, continues to do his thing. On the very first drive of the game, pressures Josh Allen, forces him to throw it away on third down after he made a fill and a run stick on second down. He has been hitting dudes all season long in his rookie year, having a tremendous rookie season. Emmanuel Ogba rushing the quarterback, forcing him not just to move off of his spot, but the Dolphins staying with their gap integrity and their rush integrity and not bailing on their lanes. I thought it was very good for the first part of this game, marrying up the coverage with the pass rush. It was very good in this game, the blitzing opportunities. And then there was a point in the third quarter, I think it was, 3rd and 14, you've been getting pressure all day. Your game's been working all day. Your linebackers have been coming in all day with pressure, whether it was Duke Riley or Brennan Scarlett or even Landon Roberts rushing the quarterback, Jalen Phillips, Emmanuel Ogba, the guys on the defensive line who we'll talk about. And then 3rd and 14, and you kind of call the dogs off, and Josh Allen winds up with all day to throw, and from that point forward, he converts a 3rd and 14. From that point forward, he was barely under duress the rest of the game, so there was something that clicked in that third quarter for the Bills or that went off the rails for the Dolphins, where this defense that we grew anew to love last year, finds themselves back in the same position, playing aggressive football, some cover zero, some different games up front to create pressure and good coverage on the back end that timed up well with that, squatting on those short routes. And then it just kind of went away. We saw on the touchdown to Stephon Diggs where Xavier Howard's playing way off. When you're going to send the pressure and you have to get the ball out quick, Allen made a great throw on that to kind of fade away from it and put the ball in a spot. But to me, I want X up there, getting in Diggs' face and challenging him. So things seemed to turn in that third quarter. But defensively, on the whole, Ogba, I talked about him, Holland. I thought Raekwon Davis was a load in this game. Christian Wilkins, I thought, was very good as he has been all season long. Zach Sealer was there for a 3rd and 1 stop. That's kind of his game, like 3rd and short defense. Zach Sealer, so hard to get push on in those moments. I thought we saw it again in this one. And then Adam Butler, too. The entire Dolphins, 4 guys I talked about all training camp long up on that interior front. They were all very good in this game, and Buffalo winds up with only 102 rushing yards on the game. How many carries was that, Travis? I'll give you an answer. Well, it was 23 carries, so it's about 4 yards per rush, but you consider Josh Allen's 34-yard run, that's the big part of that equation. Otherwise, they won essentially most of the running downs in this game, playing very good run defense while holding Josh Allen and that explosive passing attack kind of in check. They wind up going to Cole Beasley, which I'm okay getting beat by Cole Beasley because obviously your attention goes to Stephon Diggs, 5 catches for 40 yards. Gabe Davis is a big-time player for them now, 4 catches, 29 yards. Emmanuel Sanders had no catches on 4 targets. They took away all those top options, and then Cole Beasley winds up with 10 for 110, and 10 for 110, no touchdowns, but that's a guy that I would challenge Buffalo to beat me with. So good plan, good scheme, good defense there for about 2.5 quarters, and then things kind of seem to just kind of go in the wrong direction. But in that, in that frame of mind, Jerome Baker misses his first career game. I thought Duke Riley played really well. I thought Brandon Scarlett had himself a heck of a game as well off the edge. So both those guys played pretty well. I think Van Ginkle had a rough go. I think Roberts had a rough go as well. But Those guys played well. The interior front played well. I thought the coverage throughout the first 2.5 quarters was sterling for Sanders to have no catches on 4 targets. Byron Jones had a phenomenal pass breakup that saved a touchdown, basically, on a ball that was behind his head. He reached back and made a great play on it. Nick Needham had one on a crossing route as well, but I wrote that before his game kind of, you know, Cole Beasley started winning that matchup a little bit. And then just tackling on the screens. The Dolphins were so efficient tackling on screens outside and keeping the Buffalo Bills in those extensions of the running game, you know, at bay and forcing them to third and longs, which resulted in a lot of third down stops for this Dolphins defense. Again, 1 for 7 to start, and then you see how Buffalo kind of picked it up at the end to go 6 for 13. So basically every third down after that, they converted. But on the whole, I think this was the best, one of the best defensive performances on the entire year. I would even say almost better than the New England game, just because of the position they put the offense in for the first basically 3 quarters of the game. And really, you know, the 2 games combined against Buffalo this year is the best the Dolphins have ever done on Josh Allen. But even still, mistakes. Landon Roberts misses Josh Allen on a 3rd-and-1 running play where the Dolphins, by the way, had him strung out a few times. He had the big run. But otherwise, he was pretty much strung out against the running game or in the running game. And Roberts had him dead to rights, right around the 40-yard line on a 3rd-and-1 play. Could have been a TFL, put yourself in position for a 4th-and-4. And this was when the game was still 3-3, and you missed the tackle, and he goes for a 1st down. A few plays later, 3rd down again, in field goal range, but still, 6-3 is a great spot to be. And Van Ginkle on a 0 pressure with guys covered up all over the place, and the pressure gets home, and Van Ginkle, as the ball's in the air, just goes and tackles Tommy Sweeney. Just can't have that. Like, these mistakes plague you. They kill you. You can make 9 good plays, and 1 mistake will kill you. And that just seems to be what's happening here for the Dolphins. Takeaway number 3, you know, just a short one here, but just play more to win, especially now that you're 1-7. Just some more aggression, please, because 3rd and 2 on the fringe of field goal range, and we run right into a wall. And that's something you can kind of, I think it goes, I don't know who's responsible for it, but whether it's the coach, the call, the check at the line of scrimmage for Tua Tagovailoa, there's an 11-man box right there on 3rd and 2. You cannot run, you just can't run that ball because you're... The running game is hat on a hat, right? And so if they have more guys than you can block, you're asking for trouble. So to run that football on 3rd and 2, I just didn't like that. And then the running play on the final drive before the Mike Gesicki fumble, I just think when you're playing a team like that, you have to go try to put touchdowns on the board, and not doing so is a good way to lose the game, playing not to lose. I thought that was a couple of curious calls in that regard for the Dolphins in this game. Number 4, Jason Sanders. I mean, more misses this year than all of last year combined. That's just... it's tough to see because that was a guy that was so reliable. I joked about it in training camp that he hits every single kick, and that was true. I never really saw him miss. And so to come out and lose that weapon, or not lose it, but to have it be not consistent this year where he's, you know, in these last 2 games where you lose on the final play of the game, to not have those missed field goals kills you. In this one, I think it kind of dictated the end of the game in a big way too. You know, you get a lead in that 3rd quarter. Maybe Miami can drive late in the game with a chance to, you know, to come back and win that game because they have those extra 3 points. But just the kicking game this year has just been bad. And it's a big swing in the wrong direction. And hopefully it gets going back in the right direction here quickly. And then number 5 is just a general takeaway from the game and the team going forward is the Dolphins' inability to consistently stretch the field makes life on them so tough offensively. Because the ball comes out quickly. But if you want to push the ball, you need guys that can create space downfield and get separation, get off the line. You need pass protection to hold up. And, you know, as much as I love Tua's game, he's not the hugest arm in the NFL. So all those things, to me, kind of collectively come together to force you to play in this really tight space at all times. And that's a tough way to make hay, man. Like, you got to be able to force the defense off the line a little bit. And Buffalo just squatted all day long. And early on, they were having success on those first window throws, second window throws, just having Tua kind of pick his spots and manage the defense that way and find those holes in the coverage. And he did a great job, and the running game played into that. But eventually you have to get vertical, and the Dolphins just, for whatever reason, can't find a way to get it done. I think it's a collection of all those things that causes them to not be able to get vertical. But, you know, the last 2 weeks, Miami had big explosive plays offensively and had a bunch of production offensively. And I saw Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons, did a press conference. I think it was last week. It might have been before that. But he was asked about why they don't show more exotic looks and bring more blitzes and pressure the quarterback with more blitzes. And he basically said, what happened when I brought the pressure on this play? We didn't get home. And what happens when you have more guys that they can block? It means you have less guys to cover on the back end. So he said, we weren't getting home on these pressure looks. And so I'm basically just not getting pressure while putting my defensive backs at a disadvantage. So I decided to kind of scale things back and go less complicated, less complex and complicated, and play it that way. He adjusted to it. And so I heard him talk about that. It made me think about Jacksonville and Atlanta not having, you know, pass rushes that have accumulated a bunch of pressure in the sacks this year. And then Miami runs into a team that we saw back in week two who has done that with true four-man rushes with their blitz package game. And I just think that when you run into a defense that can do these things that Buffalo can and be so versatile, it's going to be tough on you when you can't get vertical, because if you can't hold up in pass pro when they bring those pressures and those blitzers, you have no chance of getting vertical, and eventually you become predictable and you have to play in a tight box. That was takeaway number five. The inability to consistently stretch the field makes life on the offense very difficult. Takeaway four, Jason Sanders, just more misses this year than all last year combined. Just a cavalcade of bad things happening this season. Takeaway number three, got to play to win. Takeaway number two, the defense finally has a big day, but then it kind of fizzles at the end. And takeaway number one, just way, way too many mistakes consistently, week in and week out. Some players we talked about in the previous part of the show here, some defensive players I thought played well. I thought Brandon Jones continues to show good work down around the box, rushing the quarterback, playing screens on the outside. Big fan of his game and what he brings. I mentioned Brandon Scarlett, thought he had his best game of the year, best game as a Miami Dolphin. Eric Rowe had some good coverage reps on tight end Tommy Sweeney as well, I thought. Thought Byron Jones was really good. Xavien Howard had some really good moments as well in this contest. A big pass breakup down in the end zone. Mentioned Wilkins, mentioned Butler, mentioned Sealer, mentioned Raquan Davis. A bunch of good, but not enough good from this Dolphins team. And then offensively, thought Devontae Parker was really good until, of course, that final drop he had at the end. But Parker winds up leading the team, 8 catches for 85 yards on 11 targets. Gesicki, 3 for 48. Waddle, 4 for 29. Gaskin, 3 for 19. And then after that, 1 catch for Laird, 1 catch for Shaheen, and 1 catch for Savon Ahmed. Real quick before we go to the postgame show here, the 2-point conversion call at the end of the touchdown drive was my favorite call of the season for this Dolphins team, because here's what the analytics tell you. 2-point conversions are about 50%, a little bit more in the offense's advantage, actually. It's about 52 to 48% in favor of the offense. So if you know you have to score 2 touchdowns to win the game, if you go for 2 twice, math tells you you'll get it once, right? That's kind of how the math works there. And if you get it the first time around, well, great news. You don't have to go for 2 again. And when you kick the PAT on the game-tying touchdown drive, you're going to win the game. So I loved that call. Great analytics call there for the Miami Dolphins. Go after that 2-point conversion and convert it as well. And then I also want to make a mention that the pass from Tua to Mike Gesicki on 4th and 6 to extend that drive and really extend the game at that point, to get out of pressure, step up through the pocket, throw a lofting pass right over the top of the underneath coverage. Great play there from Tua and Gesicki to make that conversion. So there you have it. Those are my takeaways. That's my podcast. We're going to play a segment from the postgame show here on the other side of the outro. But in the meantime, that's going to be my time. You all, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. You can follow me on Twitter at Wingfield NFL. Follow the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast. Sean Smith in the tank this week. You do not want to miss it. Great episode coming up your way. Check out the YouTube channel for our media availabilities, as well as Dolphins Today with me and Joanna and Rachel. And, of course, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up. Caroline, Daddy is coming home. And now please stay tuned for our first segment from the postgame show on Halloween following the Dolphins and Bills game on 560 WQAM, 99.9 Kiss Country, and the Odyssey app. You can find us every single Sunday after Dolphins games. Myself, Seth Levitt, OJ McDuffie from the Fish Tank podcast here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Here is the first segment from Sunday's postgame show. What's up, Dolphins, and welcome to the fifth quarter show on the Miami Dolphins Radio Network. The Miami Dolphins Podcast Network is all here. Seth Levitt, OJ McDuffie, DJ Preach from the Fish Tanker here with us. Yours truly, Travis Winkle from the Drive Time Podcast. And guys, another tight game, even competitive through about three quarters there, but it's a 7th straight loss. And Juice, right before you got here, Seth said something that I think is kind of a microcosm of this team this year. This team is just not good enough to make these kind of mistakes, to be this bad, he said. And I know there's one mistake that continues to pop up for you this team shows week in and week out, 8 weeks into the season, that's really been eating at you, Juice.
Yes, as a professional football team, and let me tell you this, a team that spends hours and hours and hours per day in a facility getting ready for a game, the misalignments and guys be on the wrong side of the damn field, not knowing where they're supposed to be, causing penalties, causing fumbles is inexcusable. I mean, you know, I didn't want to come in here like I was a couple weeks ago, like irate, but, you know, when you're in a game, in a battle against the number one team in your division, you got opportunities to make plays. You cannot be, excuse my French, stupid, because that's what we were today.
Is that French?
Yeah, it's stupid. Okay. Stupid. And it's ridiculous for guys to not line up the correct way. You know, I was watching a little bit on TV, and they were saying, well, Gesicki had the motion penalty on the first one. That wasn't on Gesicki. That was on Waddle. Being on the wrong side, Gesicki tell him to get on the other side, and Waddle's still in motion when Gesicki has to go in motion. So we got two guys in motion. We had a first down play to Laird that would have worked out for us. And then we look at it again. Gesicki's telling Waddle again, you're on the wrong side. So Waddle's on the wrong side there again. Gesicki has to go in motion. Then we have the fumble. So misalignment, not knowing we're supposed to line up, that's the easiest thing. That's the first thing that's called. The first thing in the huddle that's called is the alignment, setup, where we at. All right? So it's eye right or lightning left or whatever it is. It's right away. Then the motion comes in. Then the play call comes in. So how the hell are we not able to do those simple things when it comes to calling a play?
That's what I want to know. Like, so who's that on, Juice?
You tell me. Because honestly, I mean, you tell me. It's on the players when it comes to when the play comes in. The first thing that comes in is how we're going to line up. Trips right. First thing they say.
And they're clearly working on it all year. I mean, every press conference that Coach Flores has, everyone in 3 years, starts with alignment,
yep.
Assignment. It's the first word out of his mouth.
Correct.
So it's got to be stressed in practice.
It absolutely.
And in every meeting,
to.
I'm assuming.
But here's the thing I'm saying, though, too, though. Is you think about that. Now, and within practice, how many times are they redoing this? Mm-hmm. How many times are they saying, all right, you know, we call bingo with the high school team I work with, Archbishop McCarthy. We're on our way up. I had to get a little plug there. We're not with St. Thomas or American Heritage, you know, or Cardinal Gibbons. But at the same time, though, the first thing you do before you run any play is trips right, trips left, ace right, ace left, you know, whatever it is. And then you start, then you mention your motion, laser, Z laser, X lightning, whatever it is. And then you put your play in for protection for your guys, and then you call the play. 70s, protection. All right, now all go, X stop, whatever it is. So everything starts off with how are we going to line up first. And the fact that we can't even line up first on offense, that's ridiculous.
And this
to
is
me
not
at this
week
level.
One.
It's not even but with OTAs, with preseason, yeah. With training camp, and 8 weeks into the season, we can't even freaking line up.
That's
amazing to me
that
we can't line up.
On that Gesicki play where he runs into the snap, and that's where the game basically turned for Miami. They have a chance to take, at minimum, a 3-point lead into the halftime break, but wind up getting nothing out of it where, I mean, you had a chance to go to the end zone as well. So you could have really taken control of this game while getting the football back, and one of my personal keys of the game was win those middle 8 minutes, and they've never been in better position to win the middle 8 minutes this season than they were today, and they completely flubbed it every step of the way. So on that play, Juice, because you're telling us about how Waddle was misaligned, and he was, and we see that so often where Gesicki, hey, get over here, you're over there, you know, just telling someone to go somewhere. But on that play, Waddle eventually gets set. So why does that come back to being his, like, on him when Gesicki runs into the snap? I'm looking for education
right.
from you.
Yeah, exactly right. That's a great point right there, because at that point now we're up against the play clock. So now that Waddle's on the wrong side, we still have motion guy, which is Gesicki. He has to go from right to left on the formation.
So he has to do that.
He has to. That's part of the play. So he has to get over there. So let's go back to the first one first, all right? The first one, I can give Gesicki a little heat on that one, because he really, if he has to go in motion and there's time on the play clock, he needs to let Waddle get set first, because he knows he cannot go in motion until Waddle is set. So Waddle being on the wrong side started off wrong. But once he gets to the right, correct side, now Gesicki has to sit there and watch Waddle get set before he goes into motion. And now we had the two guys going at the same time, and then we had that first down to Laird that was called back. On the second one, now you got Waddle on the wrong side, and Gesicki has to go, and it's against play clock. Now, between quarterback and center exchange, I don't know how that ball gets snapped before Gesicki gets to the side he needs to get to. So the ball snapped when Gesicki's still in motion. Offensive linemen don't know this, man. They don't care about what's going on behind them. All they know is the ball has to be snapped.
They got some big fellas in front of them.
They got
too,
other things
they got
to worry about.
Yeah, play clock on the wall.
All
in the end zone.
On the skill guys not getting set, not being on the right side, and the motion became a problem. You know, when we went out there with that.
So the flag comes out the minute those guys move at the same time, right? So that play's already killed because no matter what you gain, you've already committed a procedural penalty, and it goes back 5 yards. So I'm sure Mike is thinking about that in the back of his mind when he comes back out for that second play and thinks, I got to get over there, because I think the play clock was at like 2 or 3 seconds.
Correct.
When they had that ball snap. So he's probably thinking, you know, I got to get my butt over there, otherwise we're going to lose 5 yards here.
Well, you know what some guys could do, Travis? Honestly, when that happens, forget the motion. When you see him already there and you got play clock situation, a lot of times timeouts call because you know we're going to be up against the clock and when we know we have motion. But Mike could actually go to where he's supposed to be, where he's going to end up before the snap and eliminate the motion completely. So if he sees that Waddle's on the wrong side and he goes and sets up, Mike, instead of doing his motion, just get over there now where I got to be because I know we're up against the clock, 3-4 seconds left on the play clock, and then run the play from there.
And I want to get into more of that because it's fascinating to me, and especially that, I mean, you're 8 weeks into your season, and that's happening, and that's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
But bigger picture, right, just to take a step back and look above at a high level, nobody in the universe, in the galaxy, expected the Dolphins to have a chance in this game. And yet, on that drive, they have an opportunity to go up 3, should have been up 6 or 10, right? You missed a 36-yarder earlier, you missed one there. You're playing against the class of your conference, the class of your division, certainly, of the conference, probably, and you've got them on their heels.
Yeah.
You're giving them all they could take and more in their house after getting embarrassed in your own house, 35-0. And I say this all the time, guys, you cannot miss out in scoring opportunities. You're just not good enough to.
Yep.
This team does not score enough points to just miss 36-yard field goals, to come away with nothing when you're on the 12-yard line going in. And they were in this game. They had control of this game, like you were saying, Travis. And yet they fall apart, and now it's 3-3 going into the half. And then what happens? Then Buffalo shows who they are.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's been consistent.
Not good enough to be this bad.
End of the half, beginning of the third quarter, it's been the worst. And we had the best situation we've had all year going to the end of the half with the football, with a chance to score points, should have been probably 7, no less than 3, and then getting the ball back after that, and we
want.
Go 3 and out.
Exactly
the
want.
Worst situation, you know, we took the best scenario and turned it into the worst possible outcome.
And that's just that really kind of is what we've been.
The microcosm of the season.
Yeah, all year long. And it's heartbreaking to me. Again, not that anybody drew it up and said, well, this is when we're going to get back on in the win column. This is the game, right? We're going to right the wrongs. But clearly, they came ready to play. Well, let me take a step back.
Defense.
Just in general, they came out and they kind of had that fire in their eyes. They did not want to be embarrassed again. This is what we thought we were going to see when they played the Bills the first time, because everybody had in mind the way that the season had ended previously. And you know, 6 straight losses. So, all right, these guys are ready to play. But I don't understand how we're talking. We open up the fifth quarter postgame show talking about misalignment.
Correct.
What's going on?
In week eight
midway
of the season. And you said it breaks your heart just, you know, with the way they lose this game. But I think the reason it does is because that's the opposite of who this team was for 2 years under Brian Flores. They were the least penalized team, or one of the top couple of least penalized teams. And they were always aligned and had their assignment and were smart on special teams and just found ways to win those hidden margins. And now, you know, for the fourth time this season, really, because they lost their last 3 games in the last play of the game, for the fourth time, really, you feel like they lost in the small margins, and that's where it got away from them. Juice, to your point about coming on that position where you might call a timeout, I was thinking to myself, they probably didn't call a timeout because they just came off of a timeout. They did, but it wasn't Miami who called it, so they could have come to a timeout, but the bigger point to me there is that they were coming off a timeout and they still couldn't get lined up.
That is huge right there, you know, because, you know, but yeah, you're right. Buffalo gave us an opportunity to get the best situation. So even in that situation, we still come out of the break, misaligned, you know, with a play. I don't even know. You know, it doesn't even matter what the play is. The fact that we can't even line up right, which is the most important thing. You know, first thing is, and I keep going back to this, first thing you do is alignment. Second thing you do is center quarterback exchange. You know, when it comes to a play, we can't line up right, so nothing else is going to work out in the long run, man. And it's a bonehead situation for a team. I don't care if you're a rookie or a 10-year guy in the league. You spend so much time doing these things that it doesn't matter. Those are the simple things. Those are the simple things when it comes to playing football. Now you got to worry about adjustments. You know, when the ball snap, what are they doing defensively? Where's this guy going? Where's the coverage going? If we can't do the first thing, how the hell are we going to do the rest of it?
That's the million-dollar question, right? Exactly, and that's why you are in this position where you are towards the bottom of the league in most statistical categories offensively.